Welcome, 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 Wahoo fans, to this week's edition of The Lockdown featuring T-Cove and the Ball Hawk. All right, you know that's Petty Hawk. Yo, it's new and improved, 2023. We wanted to start the year out of bang. So we have a coaching legend in our presence.
Yeah.
757's fine.
Yeah.
Hampton Roads.
Yeah.
You know, we can go on and on. But without further ado, without gilding the lily, we want to present to you all Coach Mike London, the head coach of the William & Mary football team. What's up, Coach?
I'm doing well, man. Good to see you guys again. Just good to reconnect and, you know, see that you guys are doing your thing, man. Proud of you guys. Happy for you, too.
Yeah, yeah, man. Coach, hey, you doing your thing, and we so proud of you. We want to make sure we're giving you your flowers because, hey, man, what one heck of a season you guys had at William & Mary this year, man. One heck of a season.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It was most wins ever, 6-0 on the road, you know, those types of things. A lot of the guys graduating, you know, going on and doing, got jobs already before they, you know, before they graduate, they got jobs already lined up. We had some stories, you know, as every season, every team goes on, things happen during the course of the year. And obviously I'd be remiss by even starting out this conversation without, you know, pausing and reflecting on the young men's lives that were taken there. You know, and just thoughts and prayers continue to go up and go out to all those that have been impacted. So, you know, with that being said, you look at things that you have a chance to impact and that are the lives of the student athletes that you're in charge of, about what you expose them to, about the culture that you have, about how do you handle adversity, how do you handle success, and all those things. And so, you know, it was a successful year for us in a lot of ways, but a lot of guys had success with reintroducing themselves to a father that may not been in their life because for whatever reason. And sometimes you get, cause your son's playing ball, then your father wants to get back into your life. Instead of saying like, no, I don't want him in my life. Then you try to do things and talk about things that, because eventually you're going to become a father yourself. Mm-hmm. And that hate and that animosity and those things like that are going to have to dissipate. And so doing behind the scenes player development things like that, and then watching it come to fruition where players mend relationships with parents or with a father, father running out on the field with the son who normally would have had nothing to do with them, celebrating and embracing. Man, that was awesome to see. Cause you know that as coaches, we know the stories behind the scenes, as you guys know. Mm-hmm. And then you see how players handle it. They handle it well or they don't handle it well. But you still try to give them nuggets about what you say matters. Be the example. You might have to be the grown-up at this point, but here are some of the coping mechanisms that you can do. Just text a message you appreciate your pops or your mom or something like that, and just leave it alone. Just send it, and then watch the responses that come back. You know, being that first, you know, being the first to say I'm sorry. You know, because a lot of times we don't even want to do that. And so you go along with the season too: the tough games, the close games, the locker room banter, the meetings, and just to watch the culmination of a season that was very highly successful, and then watch these guys grow and mature into young men. That's why you do it, man. That's why I do it. And it's, you know, all the places that I've been, it's been a blessing, you know, it's been a blessing.
Yeah. And Coach, that's one of the things I've always truly respected about you, is that it's been always been way more than about the wins and losses. It has been about the development of players, you know, as men. And, you know, you get 4 or 5 years to play the game. If you're lucky, you get a few more years and try to get to your next locker room, but few and far in between. You know, when they hang the cleats up, you know, you got to prepare for life. And I always appreciated the fact that you were always focused on the development, the life development of these individuals. And man, you and I connected on that when you were coaching at Virginia, just because we both are from the same cloth when it comes to that. And me understanding, man, look, when I thought I did everything the right way, but when it was over and the game quit me, I was kind of like, all right, well, I got the degree, but that was all I had. You know, I hadn't made the connections. I hadn't networked. I hadn't done internship. I hadn't done any of those things. And so it became very important for me to make sure that we were paving the way for the next generation of student athletes so that they'll be better. And then they'll understand how to pay it forward for the ones that come behind. So I always appreciated and respected you for always having being locked in on that part of it.
No, I appreciate that, T. It's, you know, product of the environment, growing up, military dad, moving all over the country, living in Germany, Africa, all over the place. And you have to develop a sense of a pride about yourself, but also a level of empathy and trying to understand different cultures and inviting people into your life that you normally would close off because they don't talk like you. They don't look like you. If you try to find some commonality, people want to be affirmed, acknowledged, and appreciated. And if you do those types of things, we can bridge the gap of a lot of things that go on, you know, I mean, it's going on now that have gone on and, you know, in past issues that we have in our country, but when you have a team and you try to affirm, acknowledge, and appreciate players, people don't care about much you know until they know about how much you care. And so when you see that, it's truly something remarkable that can happen because it doesn't have to be just on the football field, but it can be, like I said before, with that player, with his sister, with his mom, with his pops haven't been in his life, to see them embrace and reconnect. Because their identity is not just tied up in being a football player. You're going to be a son, a husband, a father, a CEO of a business, or whatever it may be, much longer than you're going to be a football player. So why not work on the skill sets that are going to allow you to flourish when you do leave the game?
Yeah, Coach. So being that you're on the show, a lot of people don't know this. They know Mike London, the head coach. But I want to talk about Mike London, the detective. How did you get into law enforcement and what was that like? Because I watch a lot of like Law and Order, SVU, Chicago PD. I'm a detective myself. But you a real detective. So that, I want to talk about that line of work.
No, man, Hawk, see, so I still have the hole in my ear when I was a street crimes detective in Richmond, where I put an earring every once in a while. I walk around the house like, you know, with the whole afro and all the stuff like that, you know. And so real quick, I got cut from the Cowboys. I was a free agent with the Cowboys. I got cut from them. And I'd always wanted to be a Secret Service, a U.S. Marshal. And so, because my dad been in the military. So I got cut. I go join the Richmond Bureau of Police. And I'm in the academy. VCU had the academy there for a while. And I get out of the academy, man, Hawk, I still have my police uniform tailored real tight because I still had the muscles. You know, I still had the thing. It's just like, you know, I'm going to write a ticket like, you know, with the biceps flaring. So I did that for about like 3 months. And then they said, you know what? We got this thing called Selected Neighborhood Action Patrol, SNAP. And you get to wear plain clothes, you'll be a detective, you know, whatever you want. I'm like, sign me up, you know. Damn. So I start working the city of Richmond's high crime areas, Wickham Court, Creighton Court, Mosby Court. And myself and a partner, we would do, you know, we would do some things, surveillance, we do undercover stuff. And out of that became the whole thing, you know, talk about go to class, show class, treat people with dignity and respect. That's been kind of the philosophy I've had, but the treating people with dignity and respect was born out of being a police officer working in the, you know, in the high crime areas, you know, because mischaracterized of the people that live in there is like being criminals. That's not the case. There are a lot of law-abiding good people that live in those areas that just happen to have a few people in it that try to take advantage of that and try to, you know, to be off to the side and do their things underhandedly. So The whole premise of the whole thing is what comes out of your mouth matters and how you treat people. Undercover guys were, I think it was Wickham Court, and we jump out of the car. I'm chasing him. Well, let me back up. So before that, a lady had gotten her air conditioner pushed through her front window. Mm-hmm. You know, normally you put your air conditioner on the second floor, so anybody can climb up there. But hot, somebody pushed through, climbed in, stole her TV. So a uniformed officer came and took a report, and I could kind of see he was kind of condescending to her, like, you got the receipt? You're not going to get it back. It's, you know, it's just a lost cause. And I'm watching his interaction with her. So after he's done, I'm like, ma'am, we're going to go to every pawn shop. We're going to try to find what your TV looks like. I mean, try to find your TV. I know you spend a lot of, you know, hard earned work hours to get that. So empathizing with somebody that just lost something that, you know, that, that was huge to them. So get back to the, so then like 2 weeks later, riding down the road, and it was at, you know, like midnight, and then guys on the corner doing some stuff. I jump out of the car. I start chasing the guy. I'm chasing him. You know, police, let me see. Let me see your hand. Stop. He goes around the corner, sitting on a stoop, 1 o'clock in the morning now, sitting on a stoop, just rocking back and forth, was that same lady that I just encountered about 2 weeks earlier. And she goes like this. She goes, she didn't say anything because, you know, snitches get stitches. I got all that stuff like that. But she didn't say anything, but she pointed. And I go around the corner and in trash cans and stuff like that, that's where that guy was. So, of course, we get him and arrest him. But my point goes back to that a moment, that that initial moment encounter of her probably feeling belittled, marginalized, and minimized by the officer initially was like, psh. And then when come back around, I say, oh, listen, we're going to try to find it. We're going to try to find, you know, the pawn shops. You know, I know a couple of people out there that can look for it to show that you care about somebody. And then you're in a situation where it's a dangerous situation. You're running around in the middle of the night. You don't know what's going on. But and then you have a chance to be impacted by what she does or what she says. She didn't say anything, but she just pointed. Arrested the guy. So treating people with dignity and respect is the third of my tenets about going to class and showing class. Because treating her with respect, regardless of what station in life that she's in or social economic background or whatever it might be, where she's living, doesn't matter. It's treat her with dignity and respect as anyone, you know, should. And so that became part of the philosophy in being a police officer, all the close encounters, all the arrests, you know, all the things like that. But having a chance to learn that there are good people out here. There are good people that live in tough situations. There are bad people out here that want to do harm. But at the same time, you know, my job, I don't care what color you are or what, who you believe in or any of that stuff is to do my job and protect and serve life, property, and make sure that things are, you know, done the right way. So I never forgot about that moment early in my police detective days, because it served purpose for later on, but it served purpose for kind of the coaching, the philosophy about how you go about dealing with people, talking with people and things like that.
Now, that's an awesome story, Coach. I appreciate that.
Yeah, because
he once saw the job, he became a detective. Dan, that's, I know. That's some television stuff.
Right, I know. There. I know. And I then, like and then you had an incident where somebody shot a gun at you or something.
Yeah. You know, y'all went deep into this. Yeah,
that's what we do.
We're giving you your flowers. We know about you.
You're above ground. Thank you, bro. I appreciate
it.
Was South Richmond, a robbery occurred again, you know, early mornings, stuff like that. And a big, like a description goes out about a van that did a robbery with, you know, and so my partner and I sitting in an unmarked car at a light on Hull Street, I believe it was in South Richmond, no other cars around. It was a rental car, you know, and then lo and behold, the call comes out. We're sitting right behind the van. And so, you know, we're like, all right, radio, you know, send marked units because we're behind the van. It pulls off. We pull off. It speeds up. We speed up. It slows down. We slow down. Ain't a cop car nowhere around. I'm like, where the fellas at? You know, so then they pull into a private residence driveway, and then we pull in behind them and flash the light, and I get out of the car. My partner gets out of the car. Please let me see your hands. And I approach the driver's side window, and all of a sudden the guy mashes on the accelerator. And the car starts to fishtail. So I jump like, I don't know, man, like an idiot. And I jump in the driver's side window and I'm fighting with the dude, you know, at the driver's side, trying to get control of the steering wheel. So he pulls back and he, you know, pulls out a gun and he goes, click. That's all I heard was just a click. I let go of the steering wheel, you know, and then, long story short, They got away, but they were picked up later on with the units, you know, that had the description of the van. And then we go to court and all this. So we get ready to go to court. And because where the place that they'd robbed, they'd gotten to the witnesses and said, we know where you live. If you say anything, you're going to get dealt with. So come time for the case to be presented, they didn't want to testify. Mm-hmm. So the thing that started the event was the gun and the robbery. Then it gets down to me. And because after the trigger was pulled, when they got away, they threw the gun in a ravine. So they didn't want to talk about the charges. Didn't have the gun initially. So the only thing that he was convicted on, not attempted capital murder, but was trying to run me over with a car. Mm. That was the only thing. No robbery. No. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not doing this. And so that's what got me into coaching, because it was just like one of those things. Had it gone off, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you guys right now. Thanks. You know? So it's just one of those things that, you know, God's got a plan. He's got a purpose for a lot of things. And that event, again, allows me to sit here, talk to you, pour into players or whatever it might be about, you know, particular situations. And that's how that started. But yeah, it started out being cut from the Cowboys and ended up, you know, like not guilty, you know, and I just like, nah, I had enough of that and got into coaching and been doing it ever since.
Right. Right. So, you know, that initial coaching job at Richmond, then at William and Mary for a few years, then back to Richmond. And then Obi gives you a call like, hey, I need you up here in Boston College. So talk a little bit about that, because that one holds significance, not only from a coaching standpoint, but also because your daughter was able to get some the medical atmosphere in that Boston area is amazing. So can you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, you know, you're right. My first full-time, I was a restrictive earnings guy at Richmond. And then I left and went to William & Mary, which was technically my first full-time job. That's when Mike Tomlin and Sean McDermott were players there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was there coaching while they were players and stuff like that. Then you leave, I go back, to Richmond, and Coach O'Brien, who recruited my brother, Paul, you know, he got a bedroom in the parents' house in Hampton, Virginia right now, still. You know, him and Phil Alamation, you know, those guys, you know. So,
yes.
Had a chance to go up there to, you know, Boston College with him and spend 5 years of my coaching career with him. A lot of good times there. The diagnosis of my daughter Tyson, Fanconi anemia, which is your body's inability to fight off infections and in need of, you know, white blood cells, red blood cells to correct that. The only cure was a bone marrow transplant. So we were up there. Children's Hospital up there was pretty worldwide known in trying to figure out issues that kids had. So I was leaving there because I was going to go join the staff of Coach Groh, because we wanted to go back home. And then making that decision to go back home, finding out that then John Hopkins Hospital was one of the world's preeminent hospitals in organ transplants, bone marrow transplants. And we're like, let's go. You know, and as a young parent, I'm like, okay, how much one of them costs? Well, it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. You got to be, you know, you got to get tested. You got to see if there's your there's similarity in your, you know, in your blood and things like that. So after going back and forth, joining the National Bone Marrow Registry, trying to test everybody to see if they're matching my family, other friends, couldn't find a match. And then I'll never forget, there was one day that the doctors were like, you know, I was at Virginia, and let me back up. So Coach Groh, we had spring practice going on, and he knew that I was going up and back and forth to John Hopkins Hospital. And we went practice Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, and Saturdays. Sometimes you practice Saturdays at 1 o'clock. You want to simulate game time. Well, he knew the situation that was going on with my daughter, and he purposely made practices. We started practice like 7 a.m. in the morning, because he knew that when I was done, it was that 4-hour trip to Baltimore, John Hopkins Hospital, to be with my wife and my daughter. Those are the kind of coaching impact decisions that shaped me and helped me, because we were going to practice. We practiced, but he knew that the challenge and the drive and things like that. So anyway, the doctors are saying, you know, Mr. London, we can't find a match, but I tell you, let's try you. The odds of but a parent is a match is, you know, 10,000 to 1, 1,000,000 to 1. I'm like, you know what? Okay, try me. So they try me, and I'm sitting in the office at Virginia. My wife gets a call. She said, we got to go up to John Hopkins. What? So we go there and face to face, and they say, you're the perfect match. The perfect match. Ooh. You know, so when you hear that, and you know that you tried nationally, you tried globally, you tried with your own family, and then all of a sudden they say, you're the match. You're the perfect match. So we did the bone marrow transplant at John Hopkins Hospital, and it took, and now it's crazy how God is so good. She's going to be the head athletic trainer at Heritage High School.
Wow.
Head athletic trainer.
Newport News.
In Newport News, yes. Yeah. She's working over in Suffolk right now, but because when she was at John Hopkins in the hospital, she'd see the nurses come in and get people up and walk them around and service people that were in need. So she went to ODU and then got her master's at Lynchburg College about being an athletic trainer, because she wanted to, what she observed and what she saw, she wanted to give back and do to people. Mm-hmm. So in becoming the trainer, athletic trainer, that's what she does. She services other individuals.
Mm. Mm. God is good. Awesome.
Thanks for sharing that.
God is good, Coach. God Ooh, is man. Good. Oh yeah.
Y'all pull on all the stops today, man. It's like,
oh, man. Hey, here's the thing, Coach. Honestly, because a lot of times people just see the surface, like the superficial, and they hear narratives. So when we have guests on the show, I love to give people their flowers and celebrate them while they're here. And it's no time frames like, no, let's wait here. Let's wait. Like when you come on the show, I want people to really know your story from you. Cause a lot of times in this business, journalists write your story for you, mm-hmm. and you have to go back and correct. And I just appreciate it because I thought it was just a family. It didn't recollect that that was your actual daughter. I thought it was like a family friend. I knew about it, but that just blew me away that it was your mm-hmm. own daughter. So that, mm-hmm. and the trip back and forth.
Yeah.
What Coach Grove did for you makes me look at man. Coach Grove even differently. Well. Yeah. So I appreciate Seriously. That. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was. And so over the years we developed, we got a nonprofit, you know, Tamaro's Kids. Mm-hmm. I've done bone marrow drives as a head coach at Richmond, William Mary, UVA, and at Howard. And I've had 8 players be identified as matches that have given their marrow to other people.
Wow.
And saved their lives. So the impact that it had on me mm-hmm. was, okay, so I have a platform to get involved with Beat a Match, which is a national bone marrow registry. Yeah. And, you know, we are sorely underrepresented as people of color, but we're mm-hmm. in high needs. You know, a mm-hmm. Caucasian to find a match, the odds are 83, 85 plus. For African-Americans to find a match is like 32-33%. So when the doctors are saying, well, the odds that a parent could be a match for their own child, 10,000 to one, my thing was like, well, if you don't get involved, it's 10,000 to zero. But if you get involved, then at least there's a shot, there's a chance. Right. So that's it, just educating people that it was through a phoresis machine. It wasn't through the grandma saying, oh yeah, they went through my hip and it took all that bone marrow out. I couldn't walk for 8 days. Mm. Mine was through a phoresis machine. Took blood out of one arm, ran it through a machine, separated the white blood cells, red blood cells, plasma, bone marrow, collected the bone marrow, put the rest of everything back in my arm. And then we took the bone marrow off the drip tube, went up to her room where the bone marrow transplant was taking place, put it in her drip tube, and that was the transplant. So people are like, you talk about bone marrow transplants, you're like, oh, they went to my hip. And they still do that. But at the same time, not being educated to the fact that there are other ways that can occur. That was our transplant right there. And so getting out and telling people that it's not like, oh, my gosh, you know, that's going to hurt. I had a couple of players that they went through their hip, but it was they numbed it, went through little discomfort, but to find out that you saved somebody's life, they're like, mm-hmm. Coach, I do that all over again. Yeah. So this is great you allow the this platform allowing me to say to people, if you don't get involved, there'll never be a chance. There's all kind of bloodborne diseases. There's leukemia. There's all different kind of things. If you go in a room and you say, how many people in this room have been impacted by a loved one or a friend that has had leukemia or some sort of bloodborne disease? I guarantee you 85, 90% of the hands are going to go up of a relative or a friend that's been impacted by that. Mm-hmm. So just keep getting the word out about, don't sit on the sidelines and talk about, oh, that's nice, you're doing a drive right there, or I don't got time to do this, or, you know, get involved, because you may be a one, you may be the one that can save somebody's life. And that's, you know, and that's the other blessing of having a daughter, having gone through it, me being the match, us collectively with the Tamaro's kid doing those things. And then saying, you know what, every spring, we're going to have a drive with our students and faculty members being our targeted guests. We're going to make sure nationally we do it. And people show up, people come, and then you find perhaps potential donors. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just amazing how, you know, again, if you don't get involved with something, then don't sit on the sideline and complain about stuff, you know, get involved. You know?
Indeed. Indeed.
I love that.
Yeah. That, I mean, that's amazing, Coach. And thank you for sharing that with us. And hopefully, you know, people will become more aware, and you can gain some additional donors from this podcast. That would be awesome. That would
be the match. Awesome. Go Twitter, be the match, and click on and find out. Just educate yourself as to the things, because football initiatives are going on about that just all over the world and country. But I'm strong into that because I believe in it, because I lived it.
Gotcha. So as we pivot a little bit back to the time at UVA with Coach Groh, your first stint, I remember you when you were the recruiting coordinator, and I was coaching in Tampa, and I would reach out, Mike, hey, we got some guys down here, and you guys need to come down and check it out. And you're like, yeah, I'm trying to get them down there to come see the Florida boys. But yeah, we just couldn't make that thing work for some reason.
You always learn a lot about different things, but what we know was great was like you guys, like football alum, man, you guys are strong, proud, and that's probably been one of the, even over the years, even not being there, but still knowing the Sean Moores and the Chris Slades. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I went to Tab High School for a couple years too, and Terry Kirby went there, Chris went there. You know, my brother went to Bethel. My final year, I graduated Bethel High School. My brother played at Bethel. The connections of the Tidewater 757 kids down there. But then just overall, the outreach of support, and then the involvement, you guys as at football alum, it was phenomenal, man. Phenomenal.
That's cool. And so then after the couple years at Virginia, you jumped to the Houston Texans and then came back to Charlottesville. How was that out in Houston at the pro level for you that season?
So I went to the Houston Texans. Dom Capers was the head coach then. Vic Fangio was the D coordinator. Knew a lot of guys there on the staff, and you know, I kind of figured that I interviewed for the Richmond head job prior to that 2005 year. And I didn't get it because what was communicated to me at that time was I'd never been in the NFL and I'd never been a coordinator. That kind of stuck with me. It kind of stuck in my crawl a little bit. I went to school there. I'm the same. Was a captain, MVP, but I didn't have the credentials to be checked off. And so I go back and I tell Coach Groves, you know, he's like, you know, he said, well, I'll help you in any way I can. And it kind of stuck with me because you've never been a coordinator or been in the NFL. So an opportunity came up with the Texans. And so I left and I go there for a year. And then it's crazy how God works in his timing, not our timing. Al Golden was the defensive coordinator at Virginia. He left to go take the head job at Temple. Mm-hmm. And I never forget, Coach Groh called me and he's like, hey, Mike, might have an opportunity to bring you back as a defensive coordinator. Now, my wife's in the background. She's from Newport News, Virginia. She's like, we coming, Al? We coming. I'm like, hold on, wait a minute. Hold on. I got to negotiate this thing now. Hold on a second. You know, I don't know the salary. I don't know anything. It's like, we coming, Al? We coming. And so then after that year, you know, in the NFL, then I come back as a D coordinator for 2 years. You know, had some great seasons and stuff. So Richmond comes open again, 2008. Mm. So then I'm like, my alma mater, you know, I'm already mad, stuff like that. But I'm like, I go there and they're like, coach, man, you got all the credentials. So I go to the NFL, check a box off. I'm a coordinator for a couple of years. I felt like the song Mike Jones, back then didn't want me, now I'm hot. So maybe that was the thing that was needed in order to the door that was closed to open back up again. Yeah. Do the NFL thing. Come back 2 years as a coordinator with Coach Grove. And then when Richmond came open again, that's when Clawson left Richmond and went to Wake, I believe. Then it happened, you know, that 2008 national championship year and then 2009. So which led to the opportunity, you know, the thing, and you guys know about this profession, man. I love Coach Grove. He's a football dude now.
Yes.
A football guy. If you ever had just talk, just anything, he'll talk to you. He'll write plays on napkins, back of milk cartons. I mean, he's a football guy. Yes. And it was tough that, you know, the coming back to Virginia, knowing that I was coming and he was leaving. And so that was always a tough thing because the thing about my daughter allowing practices to go so early, and, you know, so we still have stayed in contact over the years. He was doing some ESPN3 things, yep, some games and things like that. Still talking ball. But it's just kind of like when I was with him, he's always the type of coach that, all right, you be the camp director. Okay. You know what? Let me see. Okay. Now you be the recruiting coordinator. I think I've been every position or every responsibility on a staff because he said, I want to get you to where you want to go, but you got to have these experiences in order to do that. And so I've done everything on a staff, you know, and so now, you know, having been a head coach now, I think like 13, 14 years now, you know, I get it, you know, I get it, but a lot was owed to him and giving me those opportunities.
That's awesome. Yeah. Man. That's awesome. Especially because I think you really show like how special Coach Grove to you, like in your coaching career as a person, but it never dawned on me that you followed him, you know, like Coach Grove. I mean, I know it was Coach Grove and Mike London with the heads, the head coaches, but the connection and how that was probably tough on you making that transition, you know, your first FBS job is following basically like the guy that helped mold you and provide those opportunities for you. Yes. I appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah, you know, you guys know this. It's a tough season. I mean, you know, did some big things there. I remember the 2011 year. You know, we beat Miami and Florida State. You know, on the road first time.
You closed up Miami, coach.
In a big way.
You could floss a little bit. You know, they had to tear it down after you tore it down.
You know, those things, and then you know the years led up to. To me leaving and things like that, how tough it was saying goodbye to players, you know, to Andrew Brown, Smoke Mizell, Thornhill, Quinn Blanning. I can go on and on, man. But the crazy thing is that so life took me from there to Maryland for a year. We went to a bowl game and then took me to Howard for a couple of years, you know, an HBCU school, which really, to me, kind of signified Black excellence. And I kind of found myself again with being proud about who I am and not worried about it. It's not what they call me. It's what I answer to. So all the negativity and all the things like that, I get it. People are entitled to their opinions, but it's like, it's what you answer to. And my feelings may be validated in terms of, and that was a low blow. That was low class. But then also understanding that instead of asking God for a lighter load, asking him for a stronger back. And that's kind of been, you know, I've been a head coach at, you know, three predominantly white institutions, which is okay with me because I'm a football coach. I don't care. You know, but to be able to represent to other players or coaches, young coaches that look like me, that you can do these things, you can achieve these things, have a plan, have a conviction about it, go to class, show class, treat people with dignity and respect, and then let the chips fall where they may. Because if you put your identity into just being that season or that game that you win, then you'll always be up and down. I pray to God that as you leave places, the relationships, the people that you know, you still have those kind of relationships intact. And then you go on to some other place and you do the same thing, and then you go on to another place. And so it's just crazy. My coaching career, having been a lot of it in Virginia at William & Mary, at Richmond, at UVA, you know,
all the places you got connections with, it seems, too, not to cut you off, you know, like your brother played at UVA, you went to Richmond, just like the full circle. Like you saying, God's plan, like it was written, because you kept revisiting all the same places.
You know, so a teaching lesson to my guy. I remember when I was there, and I remember that we had lost to Tech, and someone rode up to the front of the house, and they yelled out some racial epithets and things like that. I mean, that was, you know, so, but they came to the house, to the front door type of thing in their car. So I jump in, I go back in my room, and, I used to be Alonzo training. So I'm getting ready to go out and like follow this person. And I'm getting ready to go out the door, and I look at my kids, and they're looking at me like, Dad, what are you doing? Mm. And it dawned on me. But the life lesson recently, when Chris Rock was making fun of Will Smith's wife, Will Smith got up and smack Chris Rock. Mm-hmm. The conversations I had with the players was Will Smith's feelings were valid at that point, what he was feeling. The actions that occurred cost him. Mm-hmm. And so that situation, even though it was way before the event that just happened with Will Smith and Chris Rock, me getting ready to go out the door, follow this guy, and do what? Because it was going to impact my kids, my family, my job, mm-hmm. my opportunities to be there. The same thing as I fast forward and I talk about the guys, I get it. You know, Will Smith listening to Chris say something about his wife, his feelings, and then he gets up and he smacks Chris Rock in front of the world. Mm. His feelings are valid, but the actions have cost him.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's life. You know, we're in life and we do things like that. So we feel validated by our feelings are actual about, fellas, you're the first coach of color at a few places. I've been called a few names now.
Yeah, facts. More than
just a few times.
Yeah, but, no doubt.
But again, it's like it's not what they call you; it's what you answer to. Mm-hmm. It's the people that you when you step outside the room or do the press conference is how can I continue to show a measure of class, mm-hmm. still doing the right thing even though mm-hmm. it hurts, mm-hmm. even though mm-hmm. it sucks. Those types of things. And in this profession, you got to take the good with the bad. And that's all part of it, leaving places, leaving loved ones, leaving relationships behind. But what's crazy is, like you said, life is cyclical. Now back here in Williamsburg,
mm-hmm.
I reach out to like George Morris. I brought George Morris to Virginia as the FCA guy with me. And because faith, family, football. Mm-hmm. And I think now George is in charge of all of FCA and stuff like that up in the Shaw. So it's like, just plant a little seed, mm-hmm. Try to do the right thing and if it works, it works. If it grows, it grows, but that's about the experiences. And, again, this is full circle talking to you guys again, because I remember T Cub, we used to talk all the time, all the time about different things. And Hawk, my brother. So I've been around you and watched you do your thing. That it's like you just don't trash a relationship and then that's it.
Right.
You never let man put a period where God puts a comma. Man Facts. Will put a period and say that's the end. Yep. God will put a comma and say, nonetheless, however, no, not yet. All those things like that. So I'm still in the state of Virginia. I still know a lot of people up there, love them, appreciate them. But at the same time, my experiences there helped me be a better person, better man, better husband, better father, where I am now, So that's just part of that circle.
Coach, I know Cub want to say something, but I just want to jump because I don't know if you remember, it was after my 2008 season in Arena Football. They filed Chapter 11, so they ceased operations. And I emailed you, inquired about a GA spot, and you were willing to hire me, but I ended up just going into media. So that always stuck with me. That's why I think of you so highly, because I had zero experience. And I just reached out on a whim, and you was like, yeah, I think I got a spot, you know, keep in contact with me, but I end up, you know, choosing this lane. But the fact that you was willing to do that always like really struck me as like, Coach Linda, that's a good dude right there.
Mm-hmm. But you know what, Hawk? So here's the thing. So this is what I learned from Coach Groh too, having been around Parcells and Charlie Weiss, you know, Belichick and all those guys. He would refer to his people like part of the tribe, like individuals that, you know, that are you, that are like you and things like that. And I got to admit, I've had guys on staff that weren't part of the tribe. I'm just going to leave it like that, you know, mm-hmm. but people that have the same kind of mindset, way you think about people, they're paying it forward. When a lot of people said about you, Hawks, like, hey, London, he's your kind of guy. That's all you had to say. That's all you got to say to me. He's your kind of guy. Mm-hmm. I don't care about the X's and O's. It's important, but you can build a staff and put guys together that have those strengths in those areas. But when they said he's your kind of guy, I'll never forget Coach Groh. You should talk about Cornell when he became a head coach. Eric Mangini, when he became a head coach. You know, they always talked about trying to find, align yourself with a tribe member where you're, you can look at somebody and say, you know, no, we ain't doing that. That type of thing. So, I've learned some tough lessons, you know, about guys being on staff that not have the same type of, weren't carrying that pail for you. Yep. But at the same time, you know, you live and you learn, and you still, as much as you can, keep surrounding yourself with people that buy into go to class, show class, treat people with dignity and respect. Because there's other ways out there. There are other ways. We all know there's other ways out there. But this day and time about confrontational, in your face with players, dog custom and stuff like that, that's short-lived now. That's not going to get you. That's not going to get you long, you know. And players going to be leaving.
It's interesting, Coach, that a lot of guys that you mentioned earlier, the Andrew Browns, the Juan Thornhills, the Quinn Blandings, the Henry Coleys, have talked about you glowingly,
yes,
you know, in when at their time there, you know, and how much you impacted them. And you know, they weren't happy with you didn't have the tribe around you during a certain period of time too. And they referenced it because they're like, you know, we felt like we had family, but then all of a sudden we had some uninvited guests over to the family cookout, you know, that didn't want to come to the family cookout. And they're like, we would see it and it would impact us because Coach London was our coach. And we felt like he wasn't getting his just due. He wasn't getting his respect. And we could see it as former players. You know, I'm witness to it. And it was very disappointing to me. And I always felt like, you know, you got done real crappy, you know, on that side of it. And it's something that I've always shared and said and spoke on it. And I know you would never talk about it, but that's okay because I'm going to talk about it. And it was unfair, you know, how you were done. You know, if you want to go to war with somebody, let me pick the people I'm going to go to war with. All right. Don't bring people in and tell me, hey, go to war with those guys. Well, I don't know those guys. Can I trust those guys to go to war to be on my same page? Because I'm assigned to oversee men and develop men, young men. And so if we're not on that kind of page, then what are we doing? You know, and then, you know, from a program perspective, the schedules that you guys played had no business playing, no schedules. None of that was in your control. You know, and so many things weren't in your control. And it was frustrating for me to watch it because I really knew what was going on. And, you know, at the end of the day, all due respect to the quarterbacks that we've had at Virginia, you got to have a trigger man to be successful. All right. You didn't have a solid trigger man that you could really count on during that period of time. So coach, there were so many different variables that you were dealt with. And so when you left and went on to be successful at Howard, to be successful at William and Mary, for me, it was just like, yeah, I told y'all so. So all of that slip of the lip, back talk, all that crap y'all talking now, you know, y'all can go play in traffic, you know, and I, that's something that I wanted to let you know. That's how we always bump for you, because you are a dude. We know you care about the guys. It's more than just football. And then the success that you have had at William & Mary this year. I mean, coach, you three-time coach of the year in the different places where you've been. Everybody can't say that. All right. And so the validation of what you are doing now, that makes me even more proud and why I'm cheering so hard for your success. And I walk around with my chest, and I wear a Mike London shirt like it ain't nobody's business, and dare somebody to say something to me, you know. So just know that we always got you, and we appreciate everything that you have done for the program and everything that you have done to impact the lives of young men. And thank you for keeping on, because you give us all hope and inspiration that look, you know, it ain't always going to be easy, but you, hey, yo, as you always say, iron sharpens iron, and we're going to keep the fight keeping on.
Yep. We, I don't know if you noticed, Coach London, but we pride ourselves in being honest with our platform and being honest in this media field. And from the outside looking in, because I started my podcast around when you got your job, I always said, as a former player, we can always tell something's not right. But me knowing you, and you came to my very first charity basketball event at Mem Gym, I never forget that too. You can, because it didn't, like, once the players said what they said, it just validated what myself and Cub felt. But we know you. We know that, like you said, you're going to keep it classy. You're not going to cry with spilled milk. You can continue to strive because you know the Lord leads your life. But we would be remiss if we didn't say on this podcast, we knew and we never thought of you as somebody who couldn't get it done. So now that we have you on our show, we wanted to tell you straight from our mouths that we knew, coach, that you are capable. And like he said, we're just proud of you and what you're doing and the staff that you built in each place that you've been as well. That should not be an understatement. Like the staff that you put together, you brought my man Dog on your staff at some capacity. Where, you know, Armando Curry, you know, that's a different dude. That's my guy.
Chip West, that's my guy.
And yeah, and Chip's doing well at Syracuse. He's got other opportunities. I know, hopefully, the guy's going to keep Muffin at Towns. He was with me for a little bit. But, man, you look at my staff, it's like UVA East. And, you know, you got Blackstock, you got Dowling, you got Keenan Carter, Matt Johns. Yeah. You know, Gordy Samus was on my staff before. You know, Vince Brown, not doing breaking news or anything like that, but I think he's going to take the job at North Carolina A&T.
Wow.
Head coach there. So it's great to kind of just watch guys develop and then become like coaches and then with titles, coordinators. And then there's a time where they're going to leave. They're going to move on and stuff like that, you know? And so it's just great to see that because they're good people, you know? But I appreciate you guys saying with you, that's an emotional deal, man. Y'all had me, you know, I will refrain from saying a lot of things, but you said a lot of feelings and I appreciate that. Cause I still would see Canty and see Long and just all, it's just, you know, it's the relationships, man. It's just, Eli Harrell, you know, down, you know, coach down there in the time. Yep. I mean, it's been amazing. I mean, you know, Anthony Harris, I mean, it's just, the connections that you make in life. And then to have a guy like Michael Johnson just hit me up the other day, you know, MJ, fast dude. Yeah,
up at Liberty.
Yeah, you know, coach, man, love you, appreciate you. I'm like, wow, you know, so you pay it forward. That's all you do, fellas. That's all you can do is pay it forward.
That's it.
There's a third of the people that like you and love you. There's a third that can't stand you. Mm-hmm. And there's a third that are trying to make up their mind. I just decided to concentrate on the third that likes and love me and don't care about if you don't like me, and not worried about trying to do something sideways. So you, that decides whether you like me or not. Concentrate on the third that like me, love me, support me, and that I love and support. And I'm good. I'm good.
Indeed. To thine own self be true. Coach, before we get you out of here, we know you gotta roll out, but we usually end our session or our episode with something called shut the hell up. I'm underdog. And what that is something gets under your skin, but you're like, you know what? I'm going to overcome it anyway. All right.
I got it.
Holla at us.
Mine is I go to Wawa and get coffee every day. People will come up in front of me and put their Wawa app up. Come to find out the Wawa, they haven't loaded their card and stuff like that. So they're sitting there like messing with their phone and a daggone like music comes on or the alarm goes off or they got the picture thing on there. Like, you want to take a picture with me? And I'm like, dude, I just want to get my coffee in the evening. So if you're going to have your app up, make sure you got money on your deal so you can get, you know, scan it and get gone. There've been plenty of times I'm like, hold on, I got them. Yeah, let me get my $1.50.
Get that medium. Yep.
Get ghost. You get ghost. So that would be my deal about man. Don't come up with the Wawa with an app and your phone app don't work, man.
Love it. Love it.
Hazelnut or vanilla? What flavor?
I get hazelnut. Yes. Absolutely. Yes,
what a win. Yeah. I get hazelnut every morning. Look at man. You know what, Coach? I never knew this whole time, man.
Wow. Well, Coach, thank you so much, man. We really appreciate you taking the time with us.
I appreciate you guys, man. Thank you for what you guys are doing and still, you know, bringing light to, you know, having a chance to laugh, cry.
Yeah.
Not take yourself serious, but talk about serious stuff. Just all those things, man. You know,
indeed.
Love you, man.
Yeah.
We love you, guys, Coach. Yep. Love you for real.
I'll talk to you. All right.
Well, Wahoos, this has been another episode of The Lockdown featuring T-Cov and the Ball Hawk. With Coach of the Year, Mike London.
Retire.
William and Mary. Until the next time, we are out.